Hey guys, thanks for joining us for this 83rd episode in Season 2 of Good Questions with Cameron Dole. Special guests on this episode include author Spencer Corson has a new book, Safety Trap, Secrets for Staying Safe in a Dangerous World. We'll also visit with actress and podcast host Malaya Rivera-Drew. We'll be talking about the podcast The Don, about hit filmmaker Don Simpson. We'll also visit with singer and songwriter Dan Call, has a new single, Get It On, from the EP, Intoxicating. Of course, if you would, please take the time to subscribe, comment, leave some feedback, check out the shop, and of course, share with your friends. Now, would you pay someone to make all your decisions for you? Or even better, what if they paid you for the privilege to make your decisions? Well, apparently it's a thing now. There's an app called Nunu that lets you charge people $5 to vote and make choices for you, like what to have for lunch or who to go out on a date with. Then you just do whatever gets the most votes. Now, it's mostly meant as another way for influencers to monetize what they do, and they can charge more for specific things. Like a writer might charge $20 to name a character after you in their next short story. Or you could come up with a prank and pay a YouTuber to do it. Got the author of Safety Trap, Secrets for Staying Safe in a Dangerous World, timely advice, Spencer Corson on the line with us today. And first off, Spencer, appreciate you taking some time.
Cameron, an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for inviting me on.
Now tell us, when did Safety Trap, the book, when did the idea first come up and how long was the process to fruition?
Yeah. So the Safety Trap, the title of the book, is a phrase I coined a few years ago when helping my clients to understand the false sense of security, which occurs when our fears have abated, but risk remains. Another way of saying that is sometimes feeling safe is the most dangerous thing we do. And the book is something, you know, when the tragedy at Sandy Hook happened, and I had my parents both who were teachers, and I have family and friends who teach, when everyone was like reaching out to me and asking for help and guidance on what to do, that was really the first time that an idea for a book came into play. It was also when I decided to go into business for myself, because what I realized in that moment was that while not everyone will know the luxury of having their own protective detail, every single one of us deserves to be protected. And so I took the skill set, which had been predominantly deployed for the top 1% of the world, and started making those services readily available for the other 99%. And this book was the best way for me to reach the most amount of people. It's really a come for the story, but stay for the lesson guide on how to master the strategies for keeping you and your loved ones protected.
Now, what do you think is the biggest misconception about the name and also the ability for the average American to take care of themselves as well?
Well, I think there's two things. One is that we have a tendency to shirk responsibility. We think that, you know, if we see, you know, someone acting outside the norms of everyday behavior, that's someone else's responsibility to report them. Or we also get another safety trap is overconfidence. We feel that we will be, you know, able to exceed expectation when in reality we most often falter to our lowest level of training, or avoidance, or complacency, or, you know, false equivalence. We think that just because, you know, I don't have as much money as my neighbor, that my neighbor's more at risk than me, when in reality the likelihood of success is the number one factor of target selection rather than what the bad guy would be able to get. Let me give you an example of a common safety trap.
Okay.
If I was to walk up to you, walk up to a general person in a parking lot and ask them, hey, is your home secure? They are very likely going to say, yes, of course. I locked my door. My house is secure. But then if I ask them, you know, just moments later, okay, there's $1 million in a duffel bag upstairs in the upstairs bedroom. That money's yours. If in 10 minutes you can get up, get it, get out, no one be the wiser that you were ever there. Could you do it? Now they're going, yeah, absolutely. So what changed in that 5 seconds? Well, what changed was they went from thinking about their home as a homeowner to thinking about their home as a bad guy. because now they're thinking, oh, well, you know, when the kids come home from soccer practice, they don't always lock the garage door, or, you know, my wife hates it when I stink up the guest bathroom, so she always cracks the window, or the sliding door on the deck, you know, it's locked, but if you just kind of jimmy it a little bit, you can slide right in. So I could probably get in that way. Or, you know, we lock the doors on the first floor, but not the second floor. So if I can climb up to the second floor and get in that way, boom, no problem. And all of those ways that you would break into your house are the exact same ways that a bad guy would break into your house. So there's a big difference between thinking your house is secure and knowing your house is secure. You know, a lot of people just don't bother to lock their 85% of home invasions occur because the front door is unlocked. So, you know, we all need to participate in our own protection. Everyday safety requires the participation of everyone. And just having that healthy sense of skepticism and that moderate dose of vigilance is all most of us need to succeed in staying safe.
Spencer, what would be the first step for a family to try to implement a safety plan for their family?
So a safety plan is something that your family can put into place, whether that's to shelter in place or that's to get somewhere safe or whatever is best for your family, valuables, collectibles, whatever you want to do. But the most overlooked aspect of that family's readiness plan is family reunification. Everyone, you know, has this this misconception, this misnomer, this, you know, they kind of sabotage their own success because they expect everyone to be together when that chaos, you know, when that bad thing breaks bad. So what you really, the first step should be is, hey, where is everyone going to meet up? How are they going to get there? Have a plan, know where to go, know how to get there. Because if dad's at work and mom's at work and the kids are at school, or it's a weekend and dad's at Home Depot and mom's, you know, in the garden and the kids are with their friends, like, you need to know where everyone's going to go. Is it dad's job to scoop the kids and then meet mom at home? Is it mom's job? So you have to have that, you have to frame the expectation, you have to manage that expectation at the forefront so that when moments matter most, everyone's not running around like a chicken with their head off trying to figure out what to do.
And by the same, you don't want, like you said, to be completely scared, but you do want to be realistic in your expectations as well.
Yeah, absolutely. The likelihood of any of us being in an active shooter event, being, you know, in some kind of kidnap for ransom exploit, being in a plane crash, any of these like things that we see on the news that raise our anxiety every day, the likelihood of that happening to us is very low. But that doesn't mean it can't happen, because, you know, just because, you know, as soon as it is happening, the likelihood is 100%, which means that we can no longer afford to live in a world where we simply hope that nothing is going to happen and then solely rely on the first responders to save us once something does. Like I said before, everyday safety requires the participation of everyone. And being willing to participate in our own protection is a very simple, a very small cost to pay for the liberties and the freedoms which flow so freely from peace.
That's right. And again, the new book, it is available now, The Safety Trap, A Security Expert's Secrets for Staying Safe in a Dangerous World. Spencer, I want to make sure and let folks know where to find more info about the book and anything you've got going social media wise as well, sir.
Absolutely. The website is The Safety Trap. That is thesafetytrap.com. The book is available today wherever your favorite books are sold. It is available in hardback. I did the audiobook myself. It's available as an e-reader. Amazon, Target, Barnes & Noble, your local bookstore. I mean, I'm really trying to make sure that the local, I'm a big fan of local bookstores. So if you have the opportunity to go to your local bookstore, please do that. Go to thesafetytrap.com. You can find me on Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn. I'm all over the place. My podcast is linked there as well. And, you know, Cameron, I really appreciate you giving me the opportunity to talk to your audience. I really appreciate your support. And I cannot thank you enough for, you know, just being the great guy that you are.
Well, Spencer, I do appreciate that. Appreciate your time as well. And hopefully, brother, we can catch up again real soon.
I look forward to it.
Now, yesterday, you might remember we had a list of snack foods that taste better when paired together. And now, people are sharing food combos they always eat, but don't admit it to others because they know it sounds nasty. Now, some of the highlights or lowlights, depending how you want to look at it, are Oreos with sour cream and onion dip. Also, somebody shared Oreos in Hawaiian punch. How about a grilled cheese sandwich with jam? Orange juice in cereal? Salami with Nutella? Vanilla ice cream and sea salt chips? mac and cheese mixed with applesauce, ranch on spaghetti, which is almost the same thing as dipping pizza into ranch, but somehow it sounds a lot different. How about cottage cheese and Tabasco, straight out of the tub? And finally, hot chocolate with raw eggs. So I guess the boiling water cooks the eggs. We've got Malaya Rivera-Drew, got a podcast, The Don, about hit filmmaker Don Simpson. We'll talk about that. And first off, Malaya, appreciate you taking some time this morning.
Oh, it's so great to talk to you. I'm happy to be here. Thanks.
Now, what was it about filmmaker Don Simpson that really inspired you and grabbed a hold of you with the idea of the podcast?
Yeah, you know, Don Simpson, I mean, everybody's heard of him. He's a huge Hollywood producer who produced the 80s classics like The Flashdance, Beverly Hills Cop, Top Gun. So I knew of his movies, but I didn't know that much about him. And the producers pitched it to me as sort of a Boogie Nights meets Wolf of Wall Street story, and which immediately grabbed my attention. And, you know, it's a rags to riches story. This guy comes from nothing and he becomes the biggest film producer in the world. And he creates all these signature 80s movies. He comes up with the ideas, the music, the clothes, and he really defines the decade. He epitomizes what the 80s were all about. So, you know, I was immediately grabbed. And then as we're exploring him, it becomes this story about an artist who becomes his own worst enemy. I mean, he had such talent and brilliance, but he also had demons, and his addictions eclipsed that brilliance.
Now, what do you think was the biggest aha moment for you in the studies or in the research, I guess it would be, of the movies that he worked on and the stories that he shared?
You know, well, I have to say that David Harris Klein is the writer and EP of this, along with Will McCormick, who also EP'd. And he, you know, he did such a brilliant job with the research. And he also presents the podcast in such an original way that I think listeners are really going to love it. We didn't want to do it like a straight documentary. So it's a mix of narration and fictional reenactments, kind of like if you've seen like the American Crime Story, like the Versace series or The Crown. So it's based on true events, but we're recreating what happened, what might have happened. So it feels more like a TV series than a documentary podcast, I think. But in terms of aha moments, you know, he really dedicated his life to hit the movies. You know, what they say about Don is that he lived for the movies and ultimately he died for them, because he lived with this level of urgency and passion the way he made his films. And so for me as an artist, I'm an actor, you can't help but find that passion inspiring, right? But on the other hand, learning more about him and his habits and his, you know, incredible insecurity and his self-loathing, he behaved in sort of horrible, toxic ways. So there was a dichotomy to him. And that's always fascinating to me as I'm studying people or characters, especially through today's lens, and especially thinking that he defined Hollywood and a lot of the culture for a long time.
And what do you think it would look like if the 80s were today with the social media and all that? I mean, there would be a whole lot less of the, wow, that really surprised me, right?
Yeah. Oh my God. That's hilarious. What a great question. If the 80s were today, social media, I think our feeds would be full of neon and gold lame. You know, I think that Don Simpson and a lot of his colleagues and pals and his cronies in Hollywood probably wouldn't have gotten away with a lot of what they got away with if the 80s were today. Because, you know, social media has its good points and bad points, right? But one of the main things about it is that eyes are everywhere. So I don't think they would have had quite as much, you know, fun and been able to get away with as much.
Now, what was the biggest inspiring story that you were able to cover as a part of the podcast that maybe you weren't expecting coming in?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, and nobody's really covered this, but okay, so season one is 6 episodes, and we begin at the end. We begin with Don's death and his funeral. And Don was 52 years old. He died on the toilet while reading an Oliver Stone biography. So right there, that's just like an amazing visual, right? And in his bathroom with him, he had $60,000 worth of narcotics. And when the coroner gave his report, he said that he died of natural causes with 22 different pills in his system. Ooh. 2 weeks later, the coroner changes his tune and says that it was Don's body was the most toxic corpse in the history of California autopsy. So there's kind of this true crime element that we uncovered, and nobody's ever uncovered this with regard to Don. We start to investigate the Dr. Feelgoods, all the doctors that were responsible for prescribing the pills to him.
And that's obviously that touches on a whole new story that that can fit into today as well. And
that's right. And, that's right. Yeah.
And for you to make it so pertinent to today, I mean, how important is that as an artist?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's always about finding, you know, finding how we can relate the past to today. Right. And so for me, it, you know, it's a story of an artist who is incredibly, you know, plagued by his demons, and he's got so much self-loathing. And he behaves in a horrible and in a toxic way in many ways, but he also made some incredible movies. So, you know, whenever you study a complicated, complex character like that, I think you can learn a lot.
That's right. And again, the podcast, The Don, about hit filmmaker Don Simpson. Malaya, I want to make sure and let our listeners know, where's the best place to keep up with everything on The Don and that you have going social media wise as well?
Yeah. I mean, you can find me on Instagram at Malaya Rivera Drew is my handle. And then iHeartRadio, you know, has been so supportive and has given us this tremendous platform. So wherever you stream your podcasts, and go to iHeart and check it out.
There you go. Well, Malaya, it's been great to visit with you this morning. Looking forward to checking out podcast myself, and hopefully we can catch up again real soon.
Thank you so much. Great to talk to you.
Now, does this guy feel burned right now, or like he dodged a major bullet? A 24-year-old woman in Germany named Sarah Villiard is blowing up on TikTok after revealing that she got back at her ex by staging a fake wedding to make him jealous. Now, she posted fake wedding photos on Instagram 3 months after they broke up, so it looked like she fell in love and moved on immediately. And she really committed. Now, she won't reveal how much she spent, but she bought a dress, hired a photographer, got her hair done, bought a bouquet, put her friend in a bridesmaid dress, and even hired a fake groom. Now, one of the photos shows them walking up a big staircase holding hands, and there's another one where she and the bridesmaid are inside a reception hall. Now, she says it happened in 2019, but she's just talking about it now, and even she admits it was a little crazy, but it also worked. Her ex sent a bunch of angry texts when he saw the photos. He also called 5 times, but she didn't answer, and he assumed she cheated on him. But she told him it just happened really fast, and in real life, though, she says she's still single. Our final guest on the podcast today, we've been spinning his tunes on KQ106 for the past several years, and still one of my favorite Rainy Day songs by The Villains, My Rainy Day Girl. We've got Dan Call on with us today, and we got a new single to talk about. Dan, excited to visit with you, brother.
Hey, man, it's great to be with you. I really appreciate you spending Rainy Day Girl. Hopefully it'll rain more there in Southwest Oklahoma. Yeah, man, it's good to be here.
Now, Dan, last year had a top 40 hit with Intoxicating. I went blank there for a moment. Intoxicating. Now, to have a top 40 hit and have it in the midst of pandemic, what was that like, and how different was that from being on the charts in times before?
Oh my God. Well, you know, it hit everybody. I mean, so it wasn't just me, though. You internalize it. Like, oh my God, my world's crashing. But what, you know, literally we were a week before the ad day, the date it was going to go to radio. And all of a sudden, gigs started shutting down. I mean, I had, you know, 10 dates set up and was ready to go out and promote it. And so, you know, my first thought was, wait. You know, I called the label and I was like, you know, should we continue on with this? I mean, should we postpone it? But the funny part was it hadn't really affected you. In fact, radio actually had gained traction as it moved along. So it really wasn't that much different than doing any of the Villains radio stuff before, you know. I mean, we just kind of went in there and threw it up, and people were listening more online. They were doing more, you know, stuff at home. And so in that respect, it was really okay. I mean, it was very okay when it got to number 39. It's really good. So no, I mean, there's been, you know, I mean, obviously everybody wants to get back to playing and doing things like that, but, we just moved forward and said, you know, we're going to do the best we can with it. And, you've got a lot of help and a lot of great fans, and it happened. So it's like, okay, well, let's put out another single, you know?
Now tell us how, get it on, where this came from for you, and how excited you are to have another single out there in 2021, brother.
I am grateful, number one. I am blessed, number two. But, you know, it's so funny because Get It On, this whole project, the Intoxicating EP, is five songs. And, you know, we had done four Villains records over a, you know, 5-year period. And so when it came time, the label was like, hey, man, have you ever thought, you know, of doing a solo record? And I was like, no. And, you know, but it crossed my mind here and there. But, and, you know, and everybody kind of does their own stuff. And then we get back together for the Villains. And then, you know. And so, but I said, if I do this, it can't be just another Villains record, but with my name on it. So I had been writing with some different people because I'm predominantly a songwriter. I mean, that's, you know, and, but the new trend, not new, it's 5 years old. It used to be you'd go into a room in Nashville and have three writers or whatever, and you guys would bang it out until it got done. Now everything is so pop oriented that these basically producers go in and create a bed of music. And then they'll bring what's called a top liner in, you know, like a vocalist or, right. You know, they'll write the melodies, they'll write the words. And so it's not, and the producer who created the music track has the final word. So there's really not much interaction. It's kind of like, did you give us what we want? And, you know, and I just thought, in hearing that from writers I had been dealing with, I thought, God, how odd, you know, and because I had never done that.
Right.
But that if you wanted to do something different, something more pop oriented, you had to at least get into the frame, I mean, of what's going on right now, whether you like it or not. And so this writer had played me some tapes that they had done top lighting, and I liked the production that I heard. And so my idea was, well, wait a second. You can't really call these guys songwriters. So instead of, why would I be writing to their music? Why aren't they not creating to my song? You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, and so I went and talked to these guys, Ryan Snow and BSC Productions. They are here in Atlanta. And they were like, what? Like when I threw the idea out, I was like, yeah, I'm going to give you a whole song. And then you guys do your thing rather than me writing to you. And so it started off, and you know, it was bumpy at first, but then the first one that landed down was Intoxicating. And then to get it on, that was kind of the next one. You know, I had a full song with Intoxicating, but they just had an idea, but with the drums, guitar, and bass, and that the riff that's in Get It On. So they gave that to me, and I just created a song around that, and we went back and forth. And so it ended up very much a collaboration, but that's how Get It On came about. I was looking to write a miniature West Side Story, a 3-minute West Side Story. Can you do it? And I think I almost got there. So yeah, that's the birth of that. It's a fun track. You know, it's a definitely shake your ass summer hit kind of tune, you know? So no. Yeah, that's it.
How different is the creation landscape now, and how do you go into, say, a songwrite or a producing section? What mentality do you have differently than maybe when you first came in?
Oh, well, you know, at first, when you're first doing it, starting off, and that is around the time, because I mean, I played in bands and stuff for years. I've always written tunes here and there. But when we started doing the Nashville thing, when I say we, what became the Villains?
Right.
You know, I would meet people and they go, let's get together. And, so it would start out, it was organic. I'm not the crazy about Nashville, that way of doing it, but that's where I was at. So I like it to be more of the like Bono approach. You just kind of dropped into the middle of a scenario song, you know.
Right.
Everything in Nashville is very it's like very clever, you know, everybody's clevering. But you organically, you would go into a room with another writer and somebody might have an idea, somebody might not, somebody might have 20, and you start banging around a few things till something clicks. With what happens now, you know, songwriters aren't making the money that they used to make. It's all about catalog now. So, right. I mean, there's not many publishers that'll come in and just sign a songwriter unknown with no catalog. They can make money. I just say it doesn't happen anymore. That used to be the case in Nashville. And even now it's, you know, so you have to, I mean, what I didn't want to do this top lining thing to me, it just doesn't feel organic. Everything starts to sound the same and you're hearing it. I mean, there's basically no rock radio. Pop has invaded, everything trickles down from pop, even into country.
Right.
And so I thought, well, how can I do this and yet still be competitive? Because The Villains was we're a bunch of, you know, early 40s guys playing rock music and competing at adult contemporary. I mean, it was unbelievable. And it's because the songs were so strong. And that, to me, it comes down to that. So nothing's changed in the fact that it has to be the best song it can be. And you have to be realistic about what you're doing. You know, not everything you do is going to be great. Yep. Most of it's going to suck. Okay. And so while my approach is the same, the difference is now it's less organic. And that's just my opinion. But, you know, it can make for some good music. It clicks on a lot of different levels. It's, you know, you're just trying to navigate. That really is what it comes down to.
Now, the social media, I mean, how unbelievable is the social media response, especially this last 15 months? I mean, TikTok has blown so much music through the roof. I mean, I know you've got to have a little feeling on that firsthand as well, right?
You know, at first I was like everybody else. I mean, I'm no spring chicken. I'm not 1,000 years old, but I was just like, what in the hell is this? Like, it didn't make any sense, you know? And then you start, once Intoxicating came out,
yeah,
people started doing TikTok things to that tune. And I would see it. I was like, oh, okay. I'm starting to get this now. And basically, the pandemic forced like Facebook and anybody that's doing live streaming into figuring out a way that, you know, they're not a listening platform that, right. You know, they weren't, you can't just like make a mixtape of something, just play it on your Facebook. People were trying that, yeah. You know? And so you have to figure out different ways. So they did what they thought was best. And you get 8 seconds of a song. If you're posting a story, TikTok, you get whatever, 24 seconds.
Right.
And you're working within those parameters. That's how crazy it is. It's funny because I've got live stream shows coming up, and I was like, you know, this year with this new single, I want to do it to the backing tracks that are on Intoxicating, make it a full show video, and I would rehearse it in a mode to where you could only see me. I mean, right. Where only I would see it, and every time I would go back to check it out, it would say, you have infringed on copyright laws. And I'm like, I mean, I wrote this. Well, I mean, I don't understand what's going on. And finally figured it out. And that was, you know, the platforms protecting themselves. So you're working within those parameters, the TikTok, and then there's girls all dancing around to different things. And you're trying to figure out where your place is in it. And I wouldn't say I'm the most social media savvy person. I mean, you know, I keep up with, you know, my Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. If it goes into TikTok, it's a stretch for me. So I'm just trying to keep up and it's tough. It's challenging, but it's kind of fun at the same time. Anybody tells you any difference, everyone loves looking at hot chicks dancing around to your tune. You know what I mean?
It's like, I know, right?
That's never, ever hurts. And you know what? Not hot chicks. good looking guys, whatever, man, as long as you are jamming this tune, I don't care what it is. You know what I mean?
Now, you talked about doing live stream shows, and I expect us to be in the same generation, same general time frame, age wise. Social media, how challenging has that been in the live streaming, getting set up for the shows when you don't get the feedback? I mean, I can't even imagine what that's like.
It is very strange. And see, that's the other thing. Maybe I'm just like crazy, but like a couple of my guys in the Villains, you know, they're so used to playing, you know, acoustic cover stuff or, you know, whenever they just have a plethora of stuff. So they just kind of, when the pandemic's, they just throw open their computer and press live and, hey, I'm playing for 3 hours, man, you know, whatever. But me, I'm not really, that's not really my thing. I was like, if I'm going to do it, I want it to be at least as special as I can make it. Mm-hmm. Right. But yeah, I did 4 of them last year. It was like the live Intoxicating at 9:45 tour, like 20 minutes each week for 4 weeks. And the second it's on, you know, because I had the fog machine going and, you know, and all this stuff, and just like, all right. And but the minute it comes on and you're like, all right, this first tune is Get It On. And then you're waiting, and you don't have time to look at, I mean, you're trying to do too many things. And, you know, doing a show, it wasn't like I was just going to stop in the middle of the song. Hey, Gary 42, man, thanks for being here, you know. So it was very strange the first week. And, you know, there's always technical things. And, you know, this isn't like going into a fully staffed studio. This is you. And, you know, we're not exactly the brightest when it comes to this stuff. It's like, oh, that's pretty gear. What a pretty guitar. But when it's time for the nuts and bolts, it's a learning curve.
anybody got a teenager around, a spare teen?
It's like you're just sitting there staring at the screen and everybody's staring back at you. But no, it actually was really, really cool. And I tried to incorporate, like, I would do stuff off of Intoxicating. I would do a couple of Villains tunes acoustic and then try to incorporate something, you know, that you know, like an 80s tune or like, 1 week I did a Barry Manilow tune. It's like,
oh, you know,
takes a real man to play Manilow.
I know, right?
And just to try to keep it fun and to try to keep it interesting, because this is the thing. This isn't touring. So once you've done it once and people have seen it, you can do the same thing again, mm-hmm. but it could be the same people. I mean, it's just not the same. You know, hey, Cleveland, you're the best crowd I've ever seen, you know, and you can't do that all the time. So yeah, it's been a big learning curve. But again, it's been fun. And I think moving forward that the good news is once I'm able to start playing live again, you know, the progression of learning this has got it to where I can go out live now. I can play Intoxicating in its entirety, full backing tracks, you know, video backgrounds, doing different things, you know, as long as the venue it can do it. And so you just, you know, it hopefully it ends up mounting on top of each thing as you move along, you know. And so we continue to grow. There'll be another thing, dude, brother. It's coming. Don't worry.
And as pandemic was going last year, I mean, what was it like getting the responses back from the listeners, especially in the midst of everybody having so much darkness, to have a light with the song that you had out last year?
Dude, it was, you know what? It was a different feeling, but it was great. People were grateful. Not that they're not normally, but they were even more so. Hey, thanks for doing this. I know it's a lot of work, you know, love the tune, you know, and that is extremely rewarding. When people are just like, you know, what are our lives? Everything's so unknown, but in that moment, you're giving them something that's, that they don't have to worry about that stuff. Even if you were just out of tune and caterwauling and whatever it is, but, you know, or they can put on a playlist on Spotify and Get It On's on there and Intoxicating. And then a lot of their, it's a good feeling to hear back from them and to say, you know, that really, I mean, that made my day, that affected my day. And so it wouldn't seem like it's more personal, but it's almost more personal. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I look, you know, I think, and I don't think that's going anywhere. I think a lot of smart artists have realized this is a way to really get in there and speak with the people that care about what you do, how it affects them, and it helps you as a writer moving forward. You know, we're all here,
right?
You know, and so that's, we're just going to keep on chugging along.
Now, how was your songwriting inspiration? Which way did you go? Did you go brighter or darker this last year?
You know, actually it went, it's funny. It was naturally brighter, and it also, you know, and I don't want to confuse anybody, but with the Villains, it's very much a rock band. I mean, we did our second record with Stan Lynch, producing it from the Heartbreakers, and you know, we made a rock record, and that's what the Villains did. A lot of the songs were written with Peter Stroud. He plays with, he's the band leader for Sheryl Crow, guitar player, and great guy. And, you know, but you did have a lot of dark stuff. You had a lot of light stuff, and there's a lot of mix. With this, I was like, I love that music. I love that feel, but this has to be different. And, you know, I like a lot of contemporary stuff. I mean, I think Lady Gaga is brilliant.
Yeah.
And her production stuff and just the songs. She went on Howard Stern and played a couple of those tunes live just on piano. And they're songs. You know, it's not just some thing. So I was like, this can be done. And it just naturally came out brighter. A lot of Duran Duran kind of synths, and because I mean, I love Duran Duran. And,
who doesn't?
You'd be surprised, but I'm the same way. Like, how could you not like this band? Even when even in high school, you acted like you didn't like them.
Oh, yeah.
Because it wasn't cool. You loved them. And like a lot of Jeff Lynne influence, you know, a lot of that ELO stacking and sound. But then it's like, okay, I can go back into the 70s trap again. But once again, I want to be able to not only compete, but show people that, you can still rock and be in this and still be in the mix, you know? And so there was a fine line, man. I mean, you know, it was like, is those guitars too heavy? Then, well, wait, what does the song allow? What is the song saying? And if it sounded, that's been my thing. If it moves me, then hopefully it'll move other people. That was the approach. So I'd say a lot lighter. You know, a lot of the tunes are, you know, you got some disco feels in there, and like, get it on, man. That's just like, but bring on the ladies, bring on the rum, bring on the, you know, the gangs. Let's just do this. Let's live. Let's, you know. So I think it's brighter. And I think that's good for right now. You know?
We need, right?
yeah, let's not go back to 92, you know? We can do that in another time when everybody's happy.
Yeah. Give it a couple of years, right?
Yeah, right.
Now, Dan, if folks want to find out more information about the new single, your catalog of singles, the EP, upcoming dates, all of that stuff, where's the best place for folks to find that info out?
Out at dancallmusic.com, and then just go from there. You can come to the artist's Facebook page and Twitter. Just put in Dan Call and you're going to find it. It's across every platform: Spotify, Apple Music. Just search for Dan Call, Intoxicating Dan Call. Get it on, and you'll be shaking that ass in no time. Don't worry.
Well, Dan, man, I appreciate you taking some time out of your schedule this week, brother. And I enjoyed our visit. And, brother, hopefully we can catch up real soon.
I'd love that. And hopefully I can get up there to the beautiful Southwest Oklahoma. And, you know, we played with the Villains. We played in Oklahoma City opening for Little Feet. And great town. And then about 10 years ago, I did a little reunion with my hair metal band at Rocklahoma.
Oh, Tulsa. Yeah. Up by Pryor. And, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was that was wild. So I like Oklahoma, and it's the home of Quick Trip, which is like, we have them here in Atlanta. It's like, yeah. But I appreciate it, man. And anybody that's out there, look me up, hit me up, spread the word, and let's keep the rock moving.
Well, thanks again for joining us for this 83rd episode in Season 2 of Good Questions with Cameron Dole. If you ever have a comment, question, or anything else you'd like to know, you can hit me up on the contact page at gqwithcam.com. You can also follow me on the socials, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and TikTok a little, at gqwithcam. Of course, if you'd like to help out in the funding for the podcast, visit our merch store. We've got hoodies, shirts, stickers, mugs, tumblers, all kinds of stuff at gqwithcam.com/shop. And if you have a special guest idea, email me, gqwithcam@gmail.com. Well, thanks again to our good friend Brandon Allen for coming up with our theme music. We're going to let him play us out and hope you guys have a great rest of your Tuesday.